Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today, the millionaire coach of millionaire coaches, Daniel Mangana. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. The only sad part of today is our friend Alex King can't make it. She has a last-minute appointment she had to go deal with, but we'll be seeing her again next week. Looking forward to that. And in the meantime, hey there, Daniel. How you doing?
Hello. Am I coming through robot-y?
You're coming through actually sounding pretty good.
Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. Just making sure. We've got some heavy rain, so I'm just mindful of the signal when we've got rain.
Okay. Heavy rain in Cabo. Wow. I mean, that's like stunning.
It rains here a dozen days a year. So when it rains, it rains. It'll rain for like a day or two. Then there's nothing. And it all happens normally within like a 6-week period. So all of the rain happens. But you get the odd half bit of rain outside of that.
Right, so right.
We had a little bit. Tomorrow we got a little bit. And then nothing for a week or two. And then there might be a little bit more.
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody needs some rain, so that's a good thing. So exactly. We have an email, by the way, from last week. Remember last week we were talking about appreciation, and you gave us a little mini masterclass. And Deborah Wilson, whom you know, of course, through Thai Boot Camp, has written in about it, and she was quite impressed. So let me just read it to you. I won't even interpret it. I'll just read it. It starts off very directly. Holy crap! Quite literally, there is holiness and wholeness in the crap, always. When we overlay the law of polarity and know that the contrasting side of this experience already exists, well, it has to. It's obvious when we contemplate this deeply. This was a generous mini masterclass on the power of appreciation taken to the nth degree. You're so right. Dan is a genius. Had to listen to it about 5 times to really grasp it all. And I thought I already understood the enormous transformative power of appreciation. Dan just took that to a whole different level. I'm in massive appreciation of him in this podcast always. Thank you both so much. So you made an impression, my friend.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deborah.
And Deborah doesn't mince words. she's a great writer, first of all. And she is very expressive. So I always appreciate that about her too. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, what you shared, it was simple as most great concepts are, but it was one of those things, like she said, it makes you think and think and think. So yeah, thank you for that. I'm going to see if we can kind of, continue that theme today. Because, I mean, we got you to do it once last week. Maybe we can get you to do it again this week somehow. I'm not quite sure how. But, I thought we'd just kind of explore some of these broader themes from the source energy perspective a little bit. And just see what comes up. I mean, last week we talked about appreciation. And that of course, I think a lot of our listeners now are becoming more and more familiar with what the Thai practices are just from the conversations we've been having. And appreciation, as with most practices, plays a major role there. Particularly, and this is what we were talking about last week, appreciating stuff that we don't like so much. That is the stuff that tends to put us at the bottom end of the spiral and so forth. And that's where you're... fabulous commentary came into it. But of course, appreciation is something that we're trying to do at all times, regardless of whether we're up, down, in the middle, sideways, whatever. And that's an interesting concept, because the reason we try to do that, well, first of all, because it helps us to achieve our goals and manifest what we like and so forth. But it's the way source energy looks at things. Source energy always appreciates everything. And I have to say, every time that I say that, every time that I hear David talk about it or Abraham talk about it or whatever, I say, oh yeah, yeah. And I nod my head and then I say to myself, damn, I mean, that is really something. There is nothing at all that source energy doesn't appreciate. That's just kind of mind blowing.
I mean, a lack of appreciation, I find, is judging something as not worthy of appreciation. Where does that judgment come from?
Well, ego, I guess.
Where does it come from? And if we were to start opening up to an understanding of the fact that that judgment is not a divine principle. It's an egoic human-led principle.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can appreciate it for what it is. Oh, look, there I am judging again.
Ah! Well, that's right. You're a human, so you're allowed.
Yeah. And then that invites us to appreciate all the grooviness that comes from being human. As opposed to judging all of the stuff that we have as humans.
But look at that right there. I mean, that was a beautiful little sort of mini example of what I'm kind of referring to, because you're a Taya master. I mean, you're good at this stuff. You understand this stuff. And yet you find yourself in a little bit of a judginess there without intending to. Source doesn't do that. We're not source, and that's the cool thing.
When I say, so here's the thing. I remember I read or heard something. I think I heard it. It's like, a woman went off to prove that she was God and came back and realized she's not God, but God is her.
I love it.
So we're not source, but source is us.
As opposed to we are made of source.
We are comprised of source. Source is not comprised of us.
Hmm. Is that a way of saying... source doesn't include egos?
Well, source has to include egos because everything is in source, but the ego in source doesn't run source. It's just an aspect of whole. Otherwise, we're saying that there's something that the divine is not, that source is not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Right.
Then it's no longer source.
That's where these abstract and infinite concepts get a little bit tricky, because we can trip over them pretty quickly.
And I find that we trip over them when we try and judge them and put them into our little boxes and try and understand them and put them on little frames, where it's just like, oh, everything's in source. Okay, cool. First, mm-hmm. Okay, but what does that mean about this? And I need to judge it about that. Whereas it just is. Everything just is.
Well, then I find myself in a dilemma, because on the one hand, I'm really appreciating the ability of source to appreciate. And on the other hand, I'm at risk of judging at the same time.
Well, judging is one of the things that as humans, I think it was a clip. You didn't watch Westworld. But one of the concepts in Westworld was that the robots don't have free will. Their entire life is mapped out for them, and they're running on this script. And one of the producers was being interviewed about this concept, and actually brought forward some science that shows that our behaviors actually are always running. We're not in conscious control of our actual day-to-day behaviors, because mm-hmm. they're all running from the unconscious. Most of what we're doing is running from that unconscious place, as much as 97% of it. The judgments mm-hmm. that we're exhibiting from time to time, we're beating ourselves up for something that we don't actually have direct control over. We have indirect creative license with, by changing mm-hmm. what our programs are. But right. most of these judgments that we're exhibiting, we don't really have that direct hands-on control that we think we do anyway. So why beat yourself up over something that was happening faster than you can catch up with?
That's a good point. And you're right. I hadn't seen Westworld. I have actually, many years ago, read the novel on which Westworld mm-hmm. was originally based. And mm-hmm. you're right. That concept was a key concept in the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at a time in my life that I read that I wasn't really into the whole robot thing. There was a whole lot of stuff. I mean, Isaac Asimov was doing his stuff, and there were a lot of writers who were investigating the whole concept of what it is to be a robot, and is there a consciousness? Is there a soul? All that sort of thing. I never really was into all of that, but I found the West Wing.
Although consciousness probably comes into that show.
That's
as well.
Right. Yes. But I found the Westworld concept an interesting one, simply because it did raise the question, what happens when you interact a mechanistic society with mm-hmm. a human society? Mm. And that did have some interesting ramifications for me.
Mm.
But I kind of skipped over the other part, the part about, you know, robots being conscious or not conscious or whatever, and what the psychology was associated with that. So as I look back on it now, I say to myself, okay, well, is it true I mean, obviously, they're true is relative. Is it an accurate depiction of the way robots would actually be in this world? Not so much in Westworld, but in this world as we know it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure. I mean, there are a lot of people, for instance, who have prophesied in a sense, you know, oh my God, it's terrible. We're getting to the point where robots are taking over the world, and they will literally get to the point where humans are considered to be unimportant and they'll destroy all of us. You know, there's all that horror story side of it. But I think there's another side of it that seems to kind of get skipped over. And I'm not quite sure how it works. I doubt that there's consciousness and subconsciousness and unconsciousness the way it is with humans. But there is something that goes on there, because I've really come to believe everything, and this would include robots, everything in existence is not only made up of source energy, but it is mm-hmm. also driven by source energy. And source energy mm-hmm. is conscious. So mm-hmm. there has got to be some degree of consciousness going on, even in a computer. I'm sitting here at a computer. You're sitting at a computer. Our computers, in my mm-hmm. view, have some degree of consciousness. Is it the same mm-hmm. as human consciousness? No, I don't think so. But there's certainly some sort of self-awareness, and that, to me, is consciousness.
Mm. I mean, consciousness is one of those conversations I think end up getting challenging, because so many people have so many different perspectives on what mm-hmm. consciousness is to them.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
I mean, if you go and speak to a philosopher, if you go and speak to an artificial intelligence engineer, if you go and speak to a Buddhist, if you go and speak to a Methodist, but then go and speak to an Adventist, they're all going to give you a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we get these perspectives from? You go and speak to someone that's in Thai, they'll give you one. You go and speak to someone that's into past lives, they'll give you another. I feel that what's most called for is for us to just honor what our beliefs are about it and play full out with what our beliefs are. Be open to having conversations and dialogues with people that may expand, shift, or transform what our beliefs are. But whatever our beliefs are, play full out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's good. That's what I think. I like that. Yeah. I also kind of take the view that maybe this is sort of an expansion of what you're talking about. Regardless of how one thinks about consciousness, consciousness is going to exist independent of how they think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, it comes down to, what are we willing to pay attention to? I mean, we've talked before mm-hmm. about how our human brains are only capable of handling certain amounts of data anyway. And by the way, mm-hmm. to answer the question in a kind of oblique way, the question you raise, you know, where do all these different consciousnesses come from, these different definitions of consciousness? I think they come originally from how people answer ultimate questions. I mean, that's kind of what we're addressing mm-hmm. here. We're addressing ultimate questions, and we're doing it from a source energy perspective. But I think that's where it all comes from. People have, from the earliest recordings in history, have been trying to figure out, where do we come from? How did all this come about? Who created it? You know, where's it all going? You know, when things go wrong, why is it going wrong? These questions have been going on for generation upon generation. And I think that ultimately that questioning is what leads to things like, okay, well, how does consciousness work?
Mm.
So
I just think there are some questions that, there are some questions that we're not going to find out the truth of until it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, there's some truth to that.
Like, what really happens when we die? And I think we had a conversation about this a long time ago.
Mm.
We believe what different people tell us and accept it as true.
Mm.
I love David. I do believe in what he's saying. But mm-hmm. he could be a madman. And none of it could all be stuff that's come from something else, right?
Could be.
Who was that guy that wrote Journey of Souls or whatever, Michael something or other? He could have been high. I don't know. Esther Hicks could have done one too many LSD tabs. We don't know. We don't know.
Somehow I have a little trouble with that one. I mean, Jerry perhaps, but I just can't see Esther doing it. I'm just saying.
but we don't know what these people do in the sanctity of their boudoirs with stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, was it, who is it? Jane Roberts with the Sith Speaks?
Right.
I don't know. I really don't know. But by the time we get to the point where we are going to know, we're going to have either turned back to a completed state and it's not going to matter, or be as the atheists say, return to dust and be nothing, at which point we're not going to have any consciousness for it to matter anyway. So I enjoy exploring these ideas, but not to the point where it detracts from the quality of my living experience.
Oh, that's a great point.
Either because I'm arguing with other people, or I'm beating up myself because I'm not living up to an ideal that may or may not even be real.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good point, because what we're really talking about is the rabbit hole of rabbit holes. It's the ultimate rabbit hole, and you can't possibly go too deep in it. And if you do go too deep, you may not climb out, because it's just it's endless. It's infinite. You can't possibly explore it all. So yeah, that's a very good, very valid point. Marissa actually asked a couple of questions. I'll throw them up quickly on screen. She says, "Do we have a soul in us, and its shell is a body? Which one do we talk from?" That's an interesting question. And when we die, do our souls walk on the earth like ghosts?
Well, souls. I think it's the Neotic Sciences that did some experimentation into measuring a body, what happened with the body at the point of death, and there was a shift in the weight. Something did move. Philosophically, there is some thought experiments that we can go into that show that there may be something there. But again, you're not going to know until you know. There are a dozen different philosophies, ideas, and supposed truths that conflict on the answer to that question. So which one of them's right? Which ones of them are wrong? How many people are kidding each other over? I mean, if you look at I was watching the show, The Man in the High Castle, which is another conversation in and of itself, but I was exploring even this whole thing of the origins of hate.
Ooh.
And how different groups have just been recipients of hate, some for millennia, some for centuries.
Yeah.
And where does that even come from? My point being that even these ideas that become insidiously baked into society about I'm the master race, which, you know, the whole Aryan movement, which some people still carry on today. I'm the master bloodline. You can look at the caste system in over in Asia. Where does all this nonsense come from? And why are we perpetuating these toxic engagements, interactions, thought patterns, habits, behaviors, and treatments of others? Again, something that we're not actually going to know the truth of until it's too late, until we've popped our clogs, and that's the end of it. I find it fascinating. I genuinely find it fascinating.
I think we can at least start to answer some of them. I mean, just from what the field of psychology has been able to identify in the last, I'll call it 40, 50 years, I think that it's safe to say that, for instance, the things you were referring to, the hate, the Aryan movement, all that kind of thing, really originates in some form of fear. And there are lots of different ways you can kind of explore that. But ultimately, it comes down to, I am a human afraid of X happening in my life. And so I'm going to blame it on a racial thing, or on the fact that, you know, I don't have as much power as I should. And I should have more power because of my skin color. Or I should lose power because they should lose power because of their skin color, or something along that line. Because, I mean, first of all, it's pretty clear the arguments are insane. Secondly, when you realize that they're insane, the question that always asks my mind is, that I ask in my mind is, okay, well, insanity doesn't just happen. Where does it come from? And for me, it usually comes from the negative emotions. That's where it starts. That's where, because insanity, another way of saying it is you just drove yourself crazy. You drove yourself nuts over something. You know, talk about going down the rabbit hole one too many times, right? And not coming up for air. If you drive yourself crazy enough, you can come up with really wild, crazy, insane stuff that is full of hatred, is full of anger. You can come up with it for any negative emotion you can possibly think of.
Mm.
And you could probably combine four or five of them together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cindy Chavez told us a story yesterday on the podcast. She and her husband live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which of course got hit by the hurricane a couple weeks ago. And they were able to get up long before and went to Dallas and hung out there for the duration. And while they were there, they went out for dinner and it was a great dinner. They're having a great date and so forth. And then on their way back to the hotel, she tripped over a crack in the sidewalk, hurt herself severely to the point where she couldn't even walk. And ended up telling us a story yesterday about how she used EFT to overcome that and made tremendous strides in a short period of time. But one of the things she told us about was how when she had that immediate impact, she said it was like she was a little girl all over again, and just all this emotion came out, crying, all this kind of things. Didn't last real long, but she had that. And while she was experiencing that, and later on while she was applying EFT, which is emotional freedom technique, so it's a way of freeing up the emotions, she found all of these emotions coming out of this one incident. I mean, the way she described it, it's like you took every single labeled emotion on the emotional guidance scale on the negative end, and she had a story attached to each one of those associated with this one event, all coming out at the same time.
Mm.
So when I hear a story like that, I think to myself, well, first of all, there's a healthy person who knows how to process her emotions. But secondly, imagine what happens if you take all of those negative emotions coming out of an event and then you cram them into some insane space with some crazy argument associated with it. You're going to come up with some insanity. I mean, that's literally fertile ground for going insane. Well, isn't that what we're describing when we talk about somebody who's, you know, from a hate group?
That's a very convincing argument, I have to say.
So, you know, I'm not saying that's the end all and be all, but it's not like we don't know anything. Definitely, we know quite a bit.
Definitely a door worth knocking on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I haven't looked at the whole hate group and hate movement thing for quite some time. I did explore it when I was quite young. I want to say mid-20s, something like that. And at that point in time, when I was in my mid-20s, this was circa 1980, 82, 83, something like that. So we had just come through the 70s. Nixon, the Vietnam War had ended. Racial struggles had been going on pretty solidly now for a couple decades. They really hadn't gone away in any way. There were lots of arguments that, oh, well, they're getting better and better. And you looked around, you said, no, they're not really. but it was kind of an intense time. And so I was looking at it from, like, you know, trying to understand what John Birchers were about and what the Ku Klux Klan was about and, you know, all these different groups. And you know, they all had different levels of involvement, different levels of, some were definitely into the hate stuff. Others were only on the periphery of it. But as I explored it all, and I probably explored it a little bit too long because it affected me pretty deeply. But as I explored it all, not only did the fear aspect of it came out and the insane aspect of it came out, but it added to my own issues because as I've detailed in other conversations here on the program, I went through a lot of confusion when I was a kid and when I was in a young adult stage, largely because I had a mom who was very confused. And so I picked up on her tendencies and I got really, really good at being confused. you know, it's a skill like anything else. Quite
the skill with ease.
Absolutely. You know, you practice these things, right? So, so that was definitely influencing my ability to process all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, all I could really do was just kind of say, I don't have all the answers here. I have a lot of answers. I explored and found a lot of answers, But even with all the answers I found, I still couldn't answer everything. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I can't answer it all. So, yeah, on the one hand, I do have some understanding about where the hate and the anger and so forth comes from. On the other hand, I have no freaking clue. It's the same thing. Two extreme different viewpoints on the same topic.
Well, I think I really do feel that hate exists because love exists, and there has to be the polarity.
Well, that's a great point.
Yeah. And love exists because hate exists, because there has to be the polarity. That tension is what keeps the fiber of three-dimensional reality together.
Mm.
And that's idea of contrast and polarity is something that science has demonstrated to be true. So there's something to that as to something that we can sit on.
Very good point. I like that.
But what pulls people into either one?
Well, on the surface, they're choices.
Yeah, but some, again, 97% of those choices that we think we are making, we're not, our unconscious programs are making them. So we have to look to the environment. And so even like, I grew up in a household with very few voiced or expressed prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very few.
Mm-hmm.
I spent my earlier years, my childhood years in East London, very, very mixed. There were equal numbers of Oriental-based families, predominantly Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
East India was primarily, I would say, off the top of my head, Bengali, if my memory serves. There weren't many African immigrants at that point, but certainly the children of the Windrush era there,
mm-hmm.
and Anglo-Brits.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a very mixed bag.
Yeah.
Right? And then I didn't have any reinforcing of any prejudices at home.
Well, that's cool.
So I have grown up without a lot of those. And so it was very confusing for me then when we moved to a predominantly white area and I faced, you know, a lot of racism and prejudice.
Yeah, sure.
Being black. And witnessed also, as I got older, racism going back the other way in different ways, and understanding that, yeah, your friend was your friend, but he certainly wouldn't let you date his sister because that's not done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting older and seeing more and more of the stuff, but it's been more challenging for me to face it incoming because I was raised not to really have that. So I don't have the footing, the box to put hate in. But at the same time, it's made me a lot more open to being in more mixed groups and mixed ideas, including religious, socioeconomic, and racial.
Mm-hmm.
So that then is the energy that I'm going to be in, most likely, conscious or not, feeding on to the kids.
That's fair point.
They're not going to have that basis. They may spend more time out in the world, but they're still going to have at least their openness to the alternative possibility based on the environment that's been curated for them by virtue of the fact that there's at least one person at home that doesn't have that and does have that mix and appreciation and an openness to other groups of different types and kinds.
And you're right.
They don't have that.
That environment aspect is a huge aspect. Because when we look at that part, I experienced it not so much with this issue about race and hate and so forth, but one of my three transgressors in the Thai boot camp was a generational of what the stream advised me to call for myself a generational family curse where money was concerned. Mm-hmm. It had gone back at least a couple of generations, and that's just how far back I knew how to go. I didn't know what happened even before that. But in dealing with it myself, I can see how it really affected me, both in my growing up and now even in my later years. Now, the good news from my perspective is that I found in boot camp that, yeah, I was using that to learn the detuning, and I was doing some detuning of it. But I also found that I'd already detuned a lot of it, which didn't surprise me. I mean, it's not like that was news to me or anything like that, but it was, it was actually kind of reinforcing, like, oh, good. Yeah, I actually did make some progress and I thought I did, but it's nice to know I actually did. But it took a lifetime to do it. I mean, I took years and years and years and years to overcome that programming. And to a small extent, I'm still overcoming it. I'm still dealing with it. So I can definitely see how, I guess I called it environmental. It's both environmental and we tend to call it genetic, but I don't even think that's an accurate way of saying it. Generational, a generational sharing of information that that strongly influences us. I think where something like hatred or race comes into it and how that shifts is in any given generation, cause I'm thinking, let me preface this. I'm thinking about something Louise once told me. She once explained to me that no matter what it is you're talking about that needs to change generationally, it often takes two generations for that change to happen. So there's a generation where X happens that needs to change. And then by two generations later, that's about how long it took to actually fix it, so to speak, which means someone in that later generation took it upon themselves to make some changes in themselves to basically detune it, to use the Taya terminology. And I think it's ultimately what happens. People end up detuning because they feel they have a need to, partly because it helps them build their own sanity, and partly because they have a generational need to just do it, just because I've got to get past that generational thing that's getting in my way and other people's ways, you know, in my family line. So I think ultimately that's where the change ends up happening. Now, it may not happen fast enough for some people, but I look, for instance, at my own life and what I've seen over the last, well, I'm 64 now, so over the last 64 years, and I can see change that has happened. It's not change necessarily that an activist would appreciate, but I see lots of change, lots of shift that has gone on. And I'm willing to bet that shift, if you could kind of drill down deep, you would find a whole bunch of people individually working on clearing that kind of, you know, detuning that kind of family history from their own lives, from their own experiences, and that accumulation that it kind of, you know, it piled up as a whole and showed us a larger societal wide change, but it happened individually.
I love that. I love that. And I think this also loops back to what we've been speaking about in relationship to appreciation, because those who are in those interim generations are in the chrysalis of change. Is that the word?
They're
in
the cocoon. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
And that cocoon is a vital part of the process. But if we lose sight of the appreciation of our part in the process, we're missing the beauty of being that connected tissue to what was and what is to come. Those mid generations, yes, they're not maybe going to enjoy the fruits of it, but you are literally the only way by which those fruits can come. You are the tree that is growing. So what would the experience mentally and emotionally and even to some degree physically be for those interim generations that fully embrace that we are the healing generation? This is what we are doing. And to dive into that and appreciate and just be in the yumminess, be in the ickiness of it and also appreciate that too. And then give that additional gift to the generations to come.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, isn't it? Because it's never a clean turn off the switch. It's a gradual turn down the volume or something along that line. It happens so gradually that often we can't even see it happening when we're in the middle of it. You have to look back with a perspective of a few decades and say, "Oh, wow, that actually did change." But while you're in it, it certainly didn't feel like it. It felt like you experienced every single angst, every single, oh my God, every step along the way. So yeah, you have to kind of look at it from the big, that's where the source energy perspective really helps. Cause that's when you zoom back far enough, then you can see what was going on. Not while you were in the middle of it, but way, way back there. Yeah. So and that's one of the things I appreciate about the Taya practice, because it teaches you think about that perspective, you know, take on that source perspective as best you can, and you learn things that way, you recognize things that way. I don't know about you, I've done that most of my life anyway. When they introduced that concept, it was not unfamiliar to me. I've been doing it quite a bit in my life, What they ended up doing was teaching me how to do it more systematically, which I liked. But I have explored that faraway perspective for quite some time, largely because when you grow up confused, that's what you end up doing. There's nothing else you can do. You don't have a lot of options.
Thanks, Mum.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, that's how I appreciate my mom, right?
Yeah.
Her confusion, which got fed to me, actually served a useful purpose. So that's a good thing.
And this is one of those points of discussion that can become a point of complacency, but every single aspect of our experience does have within it the potential for a blessing and a curse, or the both points of polarity. So those challenges all have a gift, and those gifts can all have challenges, but the aspect of it that we're going to connect to is completely depending on where we are as a point of attraction to it.
Yes. And boy, does that create a crazy wild ride. Yeah, it does. It's just, well, it's part of what makes life interesting to live. That was a concept that I've really come to appreciate the last year or two, because for the longest time, I always thought the craziness of life was just plain crazy. The crazy ride, which I didn't see any point to it. It just seemed to me, it was like riding roller coasters, and that's not a happy thing for me. Lots of people like roller coasters. I'm one of the people who throws up on roller coasters. And as a result, the idea of riding a roller coaster of life, like something else. Sign me out. I'm done.
No, thank you. I prefer not to join that one.
That's right. But I did anyway, apparently. That took me a long time to come to terms with. I apparently signed up for this. That's where the phrase comes into my head. What was I thinking? And it's true. I've thought about that so many times.
But this is life.
It is.
In all its wonder, in all its glory, in all its magnificence.
And I'm appreciating it. I mean, I am. I'm getting better at appreciating it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking the fact that.
You know, every day we get the opportunity to dive more deeply into that appreciation, and sometimes it will go forward and sometimes it will come backwards.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And guess what? That's part of the ride, too.
It is. Damn it.
That's part of the ride, too.
I had a day like that today. I was, I had a bunch of stuff with Louise's business that needed to get done that I'd kind of been putting off for the last few days. And I kind of did the stuff I needed to do to get up the spiral and start from a good place, but probably could have done a little bit better, as was evidenced by how the day actually played out. And I had a few triggers that came into play. One of them was noteworthy. I had a phone call from a past client who fits into the category for us of a small customer. And I've talked about how we tend to deal with small customers in our business, in the past here on the show. This one was a small customer who wanted us to do a really small job this time. Mm-hmm. A job so small that it was probably smaller than what we would normally even take on. Like a 3-hour job. I mean, if it's that small, and especially if we're driving anywhere, it's just not even worth doing. For a startup business, it's great. Sure, you'll take anything like that. But when you're established like us, it doesn't even make sense to do it. I was trying to be helpful because she was a past customer and so forth. And she wanted, first of all, that I didn't even realize what was going on until afterward. I had to sit back and kind of replay it in my mind. But she wanted basically to spend the entire phone call not solving the garden problem, but complaining about the garden problem and complaining about how long it took us to call her back and complaining about the fact that she hasn't had any gardeners out this year, even though she didn't ask for any, and complaining and complaining. It was just like this endless litany of complaints. And she finally pushed a button that basically hit my button of, this is too small of a customer for us to handle this time around, especially with what's going on with our schedule right now. So I was kind of like, I was leaning toward, okay, I think I'm going to hand her off to, one of the people we know. We know a couple of people who do their own freelance gardening business. So the small customers will tend to hand off to one of them. I was getting ready to do that. And then she hits me. I don't remember what the exact question is. She hits me with something and I instantly came back with, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And she got all put out about it. Because like, why aren't you giving, you know, special loving care to this tiny customer that you don't care about? That's essentially what her argument was. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, this isn't going anywhere for me.
But people will always speak from where they're at, right?
Oh, of course. Yes. But I was describing this in terms of how it was impacting my day and how I was reacting to it. And I guess from a tire perspective, I was going down the spiral, but not real far. And kind of sitting back and saying, okay, how can I end this phone call? I really don't want to do this one anymore. And, oh, how can I appreciate her? No, I'm not appreciating her right now. Give me 5 minutes. I can get some appreciation later on.
I'm sorry. Sorry. We're not taking on appreciation points right now. The list is full. You're not coming in.
That's right. Exactly. That's precisely how it felt. So, yeah. And that's what the day was going like today. It was like no major stumbles. I mean, I got off that call. Everything was fine after that, but. Little things like that where, you know, you're being tripped up by stuff. And how do you handle the trip? And, you know, so it was good in the sense that I was giving lots of opportunity to practice, you know, appreciations and so forth. It was also a little bit drawn out, frustrated at times. And the bottom line was, well, I look back to how I started the day. I didn't totally do my practices like I want to. That's why I started off my little presentation here. And I got exactly what I asked for as a result.
Oh, you'd like some of the other side of the contrast.
Yes,
you're right. Mike Mark. What's in the crap you like?
The genie of the universe really is remarkably good at his job. He's very, very good.
Do you know what that? I was actually realizing something happened today. I realized that I'd overestimated what something was going to cost me in one of my a job I was doing for my consulting business.
Mm.
And I'd been saying out loud, this is going to cost me $30,000. This is going to cost me $30,000. Blah, blah, blah. And it ended up costing me $20,000.
Mm.
And then we had two more bills for $5,000 each. I just realized today, because we just closed up the job today, just got a notification from the bank the deal was closed. And I was laughing because I've got the original paperwork that says the 20, and I was like, but it ended up costing me 30. And then I saw the other invoice. I was like, this is hilarious.
It is hilarious. And it's amazing how often that kind of thing happens too. I mean, just truly amazing. It's so consistent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how much, not even just what we say, but where we're coming from. So we had another member of Micro to Millions join the 7-figure club. We've got another millionaire in the program.
Congratulations to him or her.
Yeah. And they've got everything signed off that this is how much money they're getting. And they were like, Dan, I don't want to share it with anyone yet until the money's in my bank account.
Ah.
I was like, but it's with your lawyer. It's yours. Yeah. But you know, I'm going to wait. Okay. Well, I don't know why you'd wait. And then something happened where it's like, they're going to have to wait like a week extra before it goes into their bank account.
Of course. Of course.
And I was like, why don't you just, and so on the call yesterday, they actually shared with everyone, you know, join the Symphony Club, blah, 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 blah. And it was just so funny that it was yours.
Right.
It's like, you're a millionaire now. In one manifestation, by the way.
Really?
One 7-figure money.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, that's pretty intense.
It's like, yeah, but I'm going to wait until, so you're not claiming it. So the universe, oh, you don't want to claim it yet. We'll just kick the can down there a little bit.
We're laughing at that, but you know what? I could totally see myself doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally see myself doing that.
Yeah. And I was like, I mean, as always, you know, I've shared it here and I love to say, whenever I see something come up with the people that I work with, I always ask myself, okay, where am I doing something? Why am I doing this stuff? Where am I doing it? And I was like, oh, wow, there's been some stuff that I've been kind of apprehensive about because it's not quite coming together. And then it's like, claim it. Mm. But claim this. And if this doesn't happen, then something better is going to happen. I can claim it without being attached to this being the thing.
Mm.
I can just really deeply appreciate even the opportunity for this to have moved to where it is and start to embody that appreciation and start to embody that claiming. And that's what opens up the thing. I had one of the ladies on the call yesterday, because I'm doing an in-person workshop here in Cabo next month. And we're really excited, actually. The venue, so we had a venue for 10 people that sold out in 24 hours. And then we're looking for another venue to do 20 people. And it turns out this new venue can actually maybe do 50 people. So really excited.
Oh,
so
nice.
We're just tightening up. We've got the camera crew locked in. So we're going to put it out on the website next week that people can buy their virtual tickets and stuff, but we're going to have some more in-person tickets. But one of the women that's actually in the community was like, in fact, two people this happened with on the call yesterday, two different ways. One of them was like, they're like, yeah, I want to go, but it's like a lot of money. They were coming down from another country.
Ah.
Like, it's a lot of money. I'll make the money first. She was going to ask me, oh, can you hold a place for me? I'm going to see if I can sort out the money or whatever. And she's like, no, a leap of faith is a leap of faith. And then get this. I had some commissions to pay her for referring some people. And I sent her the money 15 minutes after she bought the tickets. And it literally covered.
It covered the tickets? That's great.
It covered the flight and the hotel. And I was just sitting there and I just had this thing like, let me just send that now. And I sent it. Literally, it was that sending was them seeing, oh my God, this stuff is real. And there was another woman that wanted to come. She's coming down from the East Coast. And she's like, yeah, well, I can put it on the credit card, but I don't know if I want to put it on the credit card. And I can, but, and caught herself and was like, do you know what? No. What about if I played with the idea of maybe manifesting the money? Goes into her bank account to move some money around, $9,000 out of the blue in her account.
Ooh. Boom.
Boom. And it never ceases to amaze me how what we claim, and not claim by what we say, but claim by what we're really believing and moving into, right, and got that deep expectation of what will show up. I was saying, oh, it's going to be a $30,000 job, $30,000 job. End up being 20. I didn't change my dialogue around it being 30 and ended up catching up.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a $10,000 reverse manifestation there, right? And, you know, with these two beautiful ladies that are going to be coming to hang out with us next month, they just claimed, do you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
That's a great reminder. Yeah.
And boom.
Really cool. You also mentioned something else that is cool too. It's not something that I think most of us spend a lot of time going out of our way to notice, but when it does happen so much in our face, in a sense, it really is kind of fun. And that's when we're part of someone else's manifestation. Because that's what you were part of her manifestation. Mm-hmm. And there are two aspects to it that I find to be really fun. First, it almost always happens in a way that surprises me. I get the impression you were kind of surprised too in this particular instance. And I think that's actually more fun than being surprised by a manifestation happening to you. It's almost more fun to be part of somebody else's manifestation and to be surprised by it.
Definitely. Yeah. Something really cool about it. And, you know, we see this stuff and we look upon it and it's like, wow, I got to be a part of that.
Right.
I was a cog in the wheel of a beautiful, you know, cart going down the street right there.
Exactly.
In one aspect, providing the challenge of them looking at going to do something that they didn't think they could afford and changing their thoughts around it. And on one, actually giving them back the money that they weren't expecting from me at all.
Yep.
They weren't expecting it. And I just happened to send it at that time within 15 minutes of them sitting there and saying, do you know what? It's a bloody leap of faith. I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Yeah.
You can't make that stuff up.
No. But it's fun. That stuff is really, really fun when that happens. The other thing that it reminds me of is when we're in the midst of this stuff, these experiences, these manifestation stories that we learn about ourselves as we're doing them. It's amazing how often during those stories we get pulled back by the old stories we've been trying to let go of. Like you told the story a few minutes ago about, you know, you had in your mind 30,000, ended up being 20,000, and you got pulled right back into 30,000. you didn't even have to think about it. It just kind of, it was bam, it was there. And to me, that's like an extension of I'm trying to think what they call it in Thai. There's a name for dust, I guess is the word that I'm thinking of.
Vibrational dust.
Yeah. But that's that's like part of it. There's another concept that's in there, but it's like old. I'll give you an example. You know about, this project that I've been working on with software and so forth and trying to get this thing going with Facebook groups. I was taking some steps, trying to move things along with that. And I came to kind of a similar decision point as your client did, who's coming down to join your conference next month. And I realized same situation. I've got to make the decision to just go for it. Don't worry about, you know, all the fears about the money and so forth. Just go for it. And as soon as I made that decision, I felt myself, how do I describe it? I didn't feel like I had totally made the decision. I felt like I was partially making the decision. You know, like I'm trying to get myself to do it, but I could still feel there was a part of myself that was holding back. And lo and behold, the way it played out was I started reaching out to, because this actually involved bringing on more software developers to keep doing the process developing this stuff. And so I'm talking to new developers that I'm talking to them about bringing them in. And before we can even get to the point where I have to decide about the money, it's like one barrier after another in the way. Like one complication after another. Oh, here's another curve. Here's another thing you have to think about. Here's another thing. All I could think was like, what is this? Like the old programming just getting in the way, saying I'm not going to allow you to decide whether you're going to spend the money on this thing. Talk about the family curse.
But again, reality doesn't have this vendetta or some opinion that invites it to do this. It's just like, oh, that's what you want. Okay. Be better if you had something else, but if that's what you want, you can have it. And then we end up getting it. I'm like, what? Where did that come from? It came from you, bro.
And that's what the object lesson was, because I kind of pushed myself to accept, but I also held back a little bit, and look what came out of it. It was this bleeding mess. It was not pretty. And it won't get pretty until I can actually clean up that vibration. So it's not like we don't get instant. I guess that's what I'm trying to point to. We often fear that we don't get instant manifestations, that we don't get what we're asking for quickly. It can take years and years and years. And I'm one who has felt that many, many times and certainly manifested the result of that. We get manifestations really quickly. We actually do get very, very quick feedback. We just dismiss it as feedback. We just say, oh no, that's just me not getting my manifestation. Well, actually, you did get your manifestation. It was exactly what you vibrated to. It's just not what you were trying to vibrate to, but you actually got what you asked for. That's where reality starts to kind of hit you in the face.
The mind doesn't lose and reality doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Always moving positively towards what we set ourselves up to create. Marching on. Boom, 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 boom. I'm marching on.
I was just looking in the live stream. Marissa had shared a comment. I think this was a while back, but I'll just mention it anyway because I think it's an interesting note. She says, "I choose not to always listen to society's rules. Go against the grain." She puts a question mark at the end of that. But I identify with that because that's what I've done most of my life. And I feel like even with this, with the study that we're doing here, that studying law of attraction, studying conscious creation, I feel like that's going against the grain too. Because certainly this is not something that, you know, the vast majority of people study these days. This is a small minority, comparatively speaking. So it's just another example.
There's a lot of conversation about that whole stuff about going against the grain. So I've been, again, because I've been watching this Man in the High Castle, which just to give some back. So it's from a Philip K. Dick book. And the basic premise the basic premise is, what would happen if Hitler won the war?
Ah, okay.
Took over? So in the universe of this story, the Reich have taken over, and then Japan won on the other side. So you've got Japan taking over the Pacific.
Right.
And then you've got the Reich control everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's based in the 60s, so like 20 years, you know, 15, 20 years after the Second World War, and we're looking at what the world looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still, for example, they're still hunting Jews down. There's mm-hmm. they're euthanizing people, like mm-hmm. killing off. They're testing kids when they hit puberty. They test them. And if they've got any degenerative diseases, then they go and gas them mm-hmm. as well and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And, you know, a lot of people have these crossovers with, you know, current quote unquote civil liberties and freedom to choose and so on and so forth. And, but none of all of the devastation started with big things. It always started with small things, but not every small thing leads to something big. So my thing is, yes, all the big things started small, but not every small thing became something big. But because so many people are living in fear
right.
that these small things will lead into something big, then what's the likely fruit? And then we say, see, I knew. I was right.
Yeah.
And I just find it fascinating to watch on a global scale what fear does. Another one of my friends, actually, I'm not going to say that, but fear is doing so much. People are taking action or not taking action from fear. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, you're not going to get what you desire in that place of fear.
That's true.
So how do we balance that out? What do we do with that?
Unless you actually want the fear. I mean, some people, I think I could argue, would want the fear, but I'll assume that most of them don't.
Well, I would say want and desire two different things. Like what we want might be a conscious thing, but what's going on underneath at a deep level. Sorry, what we desire might be a conscious thing, but what's going on at a deep level unconsciously is what's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got fear, you want it at a deep level. You may not desire it, but it's what you want.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It doesn't lose.
Yeah.
It doesn't lose. So
it kind of raises the question, though. What is it that we really want? Do we really want what we think that we want? I'm not so sure now. Mm-hmm. If you got all that going on at the deep level, how much are you actually controlling your own desire at that point?
Mm-hmm. True.
That's a whole other conversation, which we don't have time for today because there's only about 2 minutes left. So we'll have to save that one.
I do have another call, so I have to run.
So you better get going on that. But thank you very much for a fun discussion. I'll bid you adieu while you're off to do that. And I'll just do a couple of last minute promos here to let people know about what's coming up. But thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it. Appreciate all
that you
contribute.
Thank you for having me, always. And this space to just have these cool conversations on a Thursday afternoon.
It is fun. Yeah. I really appreciate it too. So, all right, we'll catch you again. Meanwhile, folks, I will give you a couple clues about upcoming events because there are a few upcoming. First of all, David Strickle is joining us tomorrow. He is going to be on the show. We may actually do a little stream of David work if any of you have the desire or interest in asking questions of the stream of David. Even if you can't be part of the live stream, just send them in, walt@lawtoday.net. That's a good way to get me, and I will be glad to ask those questions of the stream. Also, this coming Tuesday, Master Asaji, who was with us last Tuesday, is coming back for a return engagement. So he took it literally when we said, hey, we got to have you back. He said, okay, I'm coming back. And he's coming back for very next week. Already, Bridget and Janine are putting together their questions and getting all excited about it. So it's going to be good stuff. And if, again, there's another opportunity. If you have questions that you want to bring up, by all means, send them in to walt@lawtoday.net and I'll be happy to answer them ask him and let him answer them for you. So yeah, good stuff coming up. So thank you to everybody tuning in today. Thank you for, Marissa for your contributions to the live stream. And thank you especially to our podcast listeners everywhere. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.